I'm Karen Given, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. It's been 2 years since the FBI indicted four assistant college basketball coaches, igniting what became known as the college basketball corruption scandal. This week, the NCAA made its case against Kansas, and that's where we'll start. I'm joined by The Washington Post's Jerry Brewer and by Bleacher Report's Master Tesfatsian. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
Jerry, you're up first this week.
Well, Karen, it is on, finally. I think for those of us who followed the college basketball corruption scandal through the courts, we knew that it wasn't going to be quite as big of a deal as what the NCAA did about the information that the FBI had learned. And so now the NCAA is going after a big fish. They're going after the Kansas Jayhawks. They have sent them their notice of allegations, which includes three level one violations, a charge of lack of institutional control, which is one of the more serious things that the NCAA can levy, and then the new head coach responsibility charge against Hall of Famer Bill Self. Kansas is kind of setting up what could be a long legal battle, but if the NCAA is not overstepping, this could be significant punishment. And it also alludes to, there's about 20 schools that were part of this FBI investigation, including Louisville, which stays in NCAA trouble, and Arizona. The question, however, is, does the NCAA, which is almost a partner with these schools because it benefits so much, do they have the stomach to punish that many programs when it could affect their bottom line?
Master, what do you think?
There's going to be a lot of teams that are going to look at the FBI investigation and view it as a one-off of what has constantly been a continuous problem within the NCAA, which is obviously exploiting college athletes, not allowing them to receive the compensation that they rightfully deserve. And the loophole's constantly been by going through these shoe companies and these shoe deals or going through boosters and finding other ways to have these bag men to pay for these athletes. And now this has been exposed. I don't know what exactly the NCAA can do and how exactly it has the right to punish the Kansas schools, the Louisville schools, the Arizona schools, rightfully so, and still argue and say that college players who are seeking compensation is the biggest issue facing college athletes moving forward. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's a system that clearly needs to be updated that they're not trying to update. Either the NCAA has to move forward with either paying athletes or allowing schools to do these things, or they're going to end up falling apart and there's going to be something else that replaces them.
I think this whole thing is going to be really interesting, in part because Kansas is clearly decided to fight. And I don't for a minute believe their assertions that Bill Self and the coaching staff didn't know that a representative of Adidas was offering players money, right? Like, but that said, I find myself wondering if the NCAA took on Kansas first because they knew Kansas would fight and they knew that this would drag on forever. And maybe they're just hoping that we'll all forget about it by the time it's resolved.
I think that they took on Kansas first because they wanted to send a message. They were embarrassed over the past 2 years. You kept hearing the word impotent in relation to the NCAA. And so I think they're fired up and they're motivated to show that they do have some teeth.
Yeah. All right, Master, what have you got for us?
I want to talk about the Washington football team. This team stinks. It's stunk for 20 years now. It's stunk since Dan Snyder's bought the team in 1999, and it was completely on display Monday night when the Washington football team got blown out by the Chicago Bears, and it dropped their record to 2-17 at home on Monday night games since FedEx Field opened in 1997. It's an organization that has completely struggled under Dan Snyder, and it's an organization that has sucked the energy out of the entire fan base, which was once a very prideful fan base. And I've never seen an NFL franchise go from such a fan base that had so much pride to one where you can buy tickets off Groupon now. And at some point, Dan Snyder needs to sell this team, but he will not. That is the ultimate change that needs to happen that will not ultimately.
Jerry, I'm going to assume you have some thoughts on this.
Well, Karen and Master, the first thing I look at is the birth certificate, and it says that Daniel Snyder doesn't turn 55 until November.
Wow.
He is one of the youngest owners in the NFL. At 54 years old, he could very easily own this franchise for the next 30 years. So if you think the first 20 years have been bad, Just you wait until his golden anniversary and see how far things have sunk. It's incredible that, you know, as much as he's been through over 20 years of ownership, it doesn't seem like he's learning the lessons. He's one of the worst owners in professional sports, which is saying a lot. I think there's a lot of questionable ownership, but they continue to make money. Yeah. And when we talk about, oh, he should sell the team, that's the problem there. I mean, you're talking about a franchise that is worth almost $4 billion. And in reality, if you wanted to buy the Washington Redskins from Daniel Snyder, it would probably cost you $4.5 billion, approaching $5 billion, before he would open his eyes and decide to sell the team.
Man. You know, I think I get overwhelmed by bad headlines about this team, right? So, okay, so they lost the first three games. That happens. Okay, so they got embarrassed on Monday Night Football. Well, that definitely happens. You know, okay, so there's a guy stirring Gatorade with an unopened sleeve of cups. Well, that's really unusual, but I kind of think it's ingenious, so I'm not going to blame them for that. I mean, I know that fans in Washington expect more from this team, but it's not like they're Miami trading away all their players. Is the problem that they're actually trying to win and still losing?
That is 100% the problem. They actually continuously think every single year that they're fielding a playoff team that could make a deep run. Where unlike the Dolphins, who are taking the strategy that we've seen more and more in sports these days, where teams are trying to tank, Washington doesn't have a strategy. They're just piecing together whoever wants to come here for however much money they can pay them. And, you know, sometimes they'll make attractive signings like Landon Collins and, you know, bring in draft guys like Dwayne Haskins, who I think is someone who down the road has a lot of promise and potential to be a good starting quarterback at some point. But they continuously think they have these pieces that they can build around, and it never comes to fruition. Something happens, and players are recognized, and they do not want to go to Washington unless the bag is just ridiculous in terms of how much they're able to get in free agency.
All right, folks, I have some bad news. The Columbia Marching Band has been barred from all future athletic events. You remember the Columbia Marching Band, right? Here they are playing during halftime of a game against Yale in 2014. I could listen to that all day. So band members are not required to have any musical experience. Drummers drum on toilet seats. There are some band members that don't even have instruments. They just kind of dance around on the field. And when the band bothers to make a formation, that formation is likely to resemble the male anatomy. I mean, really, what's not to love about this group? According to reports, Columbia plans to form a new spirit organization overseen by a faculty director.
Wow.
A faculty director? Really? I mean, nothing against faculty directors, but they ruin everything. Am I right, Jerry?
Yes, they do. You know, whatever spirit organization they put together is guaranteed to stink on a level that is much worse than the Washington football team. This is a case in the university taking itself way too seriously. This Columbia band was just this great representation of counterculture.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like it was performance art in which they were just making fun of the pageantry of major college athletics.
Uh-huh.
I always looked at it that way. And so I will greatly, greatly miss them.
How about you, Master? Are you going to miss them?
I had never heard of them until before this moment. And as Jerry has proposed, that an Ivy League school taking itself way too seriously, you don't say. And this is coming from an Arizona State alum who never takes himself very seriously. I mean, this whole story is very Ivy League. I'll just say that as an outsider looking in. I come from the South in Dallas, so when I hear bands and I heard that music, that was not what I was expecting. I'm used to HBCU bands and the Battle of the Bands that you have at the Cotton Bowl Classic, which is actually going on during the state fair. And you hear bands like Southern and Grambling and Florida A&M, and you know how much pride and prestige they have. For me to hear a college band that doesn't have any sort of experience needed to join, that is, I've never heard of that before in my life. So I don't know necessarily if I will miss it, but these kids are supposed to be kids. So in that regard, yes. However, I would hope that at least they would have some sort of requirements so people can actually play music that sounds somewhat better than what I just heard.
Well, for the record, the football isn't that great either, so.
that should be a new rule, though. Like, you know, the level of your football team, the band should match it.
Oh, perfect.
I once wrote a story in college, one of the worst games I saw, and I wrote it as poorly as the game was played. There was all kinds of misspellings, and I created new words and just punctuated however I wanted. That's the way the band should do it.
You never showed me that clip when you were mentoring me.
No.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been the Washington Post's Jerry Brewer and Bleacher Report's Master Tesfatsian. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you like what you hear on Only a Game, please help us spread the word. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen, and help your friends find our show. We'll be right back with Charlie Pierce, and don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game NPR.